based on Takona. It's based on a Chayrim to Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom in his Bezdin, in the approximately the year 1000, made a number of different enactments. So one of the enactments was that even though according to strict Torah law, a man would be able to divorce his wife against her will, so he made an enactment that it is prohibited to divorce a woman bal korcha against the will. Just as a get has to be given voluntarily by the husband, it has to be accepted voluntarily by the wife. That's one decree that Rabbeinu Gershom made. But he also made another decree. Because according to Torah law, as you see in the first source over here from the Shulchan Aruch, in Ebenezer, Siman Aleph, Siftes, Nosei Adam Kamenoshim, that a man is allowed to marry many wives. He can even marry 100 wives. Technically speaking, that's if he has lots of money, if he's a billionaire, and he's able to support each of the wives, so then he can marry many, many wives. But the Chachamim gave an Eisa Toba. They gave a good idea. It's a good idea, don't marry more than four wives. So remember that. You shouldn't marry more than four wives. That was the good idea that Chazal had, and the Gemara explains, so that there'll be appropriate time to have conjugal relations with each wife. And it'll be easier to support all the different wives if it's not more than four wives. But at least four wives, even according to the Eitz HaTova, it was considered to be perfectly fine for a man to have four wives. So Rabbeinu Gershom came along and he said, not only is he making an enactment that a man can't divorce his wife against the will, but he's making a further enactment that a man is not allowed to marry multiple wives. Some say that the one enactment was considered to be kind of for the purpose of strengthening the other enactment, namely that if a man wanted to get out of the fact that he couldn't divorce his wife against her will, so he might just figure out that an easy way that he can avoid the problem of a wife who is refusing to accept the get and he wants to marry somebody else, is okay. So he'll say, oh, she's not going to accept a get from me against her will, so I'll just go marry another wife anyway. So therefore, you would have an end run against that particular takana. So some say that the second takana was really to strengthen the first takana. But there are about seven other reasons that are given as well. So one reason that the Rashba gives for this takana that Rabbeinu Gershom, the Schayim, is a very, very strong ban that he enacted, that you can't marry more than one wife, is because there were men who were abusing their wives. So I guess it's bad enough to abuse one wife. So you shouldn't abuse multiple wives. Another explanation that was given by the Rosh is that it creates an aguna situation, that if a man is not so pleased with one wife, he'll marry a different wife and he'll completely ignore the first wife. So she'll be basically an aguna who is stuck to this man because she doesn't have a get. And yet she doesn't have a functional marriage either. The main reason that seems to be brought, the Beis Shmuel, in Sivkatan Chav Beis, close to the Hagos Mordechai, that the real concern was a chashash ketata, that it's going to lead to quarreling and strife. That if there were multiple wives, so each one is going to be a rival to the other. That's why a co-wife is called in the Mishnayos, is called a tzara. It's called a source of distress because they're going to be competing with each other. It's going to cause strife and quarreling, so it's better to just have one wife to quarrel with as opposed to many, many wives. And then another reason that's given is because we said originally that a man should only marry multiple wives if he's able to support all of them. But the concern, as Maharam Padova mentions this and others, is that it's as the Golos went on, it became more difficult to support multiple wives. So therefore, by keeping it that a person can only marry one wife, it's easier to make sure that there is a sufficient amount of support. How much credit card debt can one person incur? And then another reason that's given is that the nations of the world already at that time had a general practice that they were monogamous, that they didn't marry more than one wife, and it would look bad for us. It would look bad for us in the eyes of the nations of the world if we would all have multiple wives, and they didn't have multiple wives. So that's another explanation for it. Another explanation is that the Gemara in Baba Basra towards the end of Perek Cheskos Sabbatim says that really Chazal wanted to enact that after the Churban HaBayis, people shouldn't get married altogether. That it's not a happy time. So why get married? The problem is, if people wouldn't get married, you wouldn't have children. That would be the end of Klal Yisrael. So that's why they couldn't stop people from getting married. But once you're going to get married, so one wife is enough. It's important not to overdo it. There's also a Gemara that says that you shouldn't have a wife at every port. You shouldn't have a wife in one country and then another wife in another country. This still happens. The people sometimes have multiple families. They have a secret life. They have in some faraway country. They have another wife and children. And so the Chazal said, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to have a wife and children in a faraway country, because the children in one place are not going to know that there are children in the other place. They'll take a trip overseas. They'll meet your son will meet a very nice girl, and they'll be very compatible. The reason they're compatible is because they share the same father, but they're not going to know that they share the same father, and they'll end up getting married to each other, and they're going to commit incest. So one way to avoid having that particular problem is just saying, well, don't have different wives in different countries, don't even have different wives in the same country, so you'll be able to avoid these problems. So there were all kinds of very good reasons for Rabbeinu Gershom to make his takana. Thing is that once he made this takana, so it also creates the problem that sometimes it really is a hardship for a man to only be married to one wife. When would it be a hardship? Let's say that there's a marriage where we know about aguna situations where a wife is stuck in a non-functional marriage and she's not able to receive a get. So that's very difficult because that's a Torah-based situation. You can't free a woman without a get. The only two ways that a woman can be freed from her husband: either she receives a get or the husband dies. But if she doesn't have the benefit, so to speak, of either of those escape hatches, and she's in a dead marriage, so she's basically trapped, she becomes an aguna. So, but why should we create the same hardship for a man? One of the cases, for example, where a woman might be an aguna is if the husband loses his mind, that he unfortunately suffers from dementia, he's not capable of giving her a get. We have situations sometimes we've had over the years in the Besdin, sad situation, where a man comes down with Alzheimer's, and he's in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And it's known that as the disease is going to progress, he's no longer going to recognize his wife anymore. He might live for another 20 years, but there's not going to be a functional marriage between them. So as a matter of love, because he loves her so much, he doesn't want her to be trapped for the next 20 years. He gives her a get while he still has his wits about him, so that she'll have the ability to marry somebody else and go on and live a happily married life with another man. So we've done gittin on occasion in that type of situation. But sometimes a man is so far gone that he's not able to give a get anymore. So let's say that happens to a man who's married, that the wife ends up having dementia, and the man wants to be able, it's not that he doesn't want to take care of his wife, he's prepared to continue to take care of his wife, pay the medical bills, make sure she's insured, and do all of those things, but he wants to be able to have a married life. So in that case, it was felt that it is appropriate to allow a man to marry another wife. Well, what if you have a mitzvah situation? Every man is supposed to perform the mitzvah, puavu, supposed to have children. Let's say he marries a woman, and the woman's not capable of having children. So we say he's supposed to give it at least 10 years. But if you give it 10 years and the woman still isn't able to have children, so he wants to have children. He has the right to say, okay, I want to give you a divorce. But what if she refuses to accept the get? So he says, okay, you're going to refuse to accept the get, but I want to build a home with somebody else. I want to have children with somebody else. So based on Rabbeinu Gershom, are we going to say that we're not going to allow him to marry a second wife? Maybe we will. Maybe we'll say that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so it didn't work out for him to have children with his wife. We're not going to let him marry a second wife. And maybe we'll say, no, it's a big mitzvah. It's a big mitzvah to perform Pru Avu, that we don't want a person to be mevatel the mitzvah of Pru Avu, to fail to perform this very important mitzvah. So maybe we should override the cherem in such a case. So that's what's discussed by the Ramah, the Mechaber, and the Ramah in Sif Yud, the very first Siman in Eben Ezer in Sif Yud. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes Rabbeinu Gershom, and the Ramah quotes the possibility of when we might override this takana of Rabbeinu Gershom of prohibiting a man from marrying two wives. Interestingly, one thing that's missing in the entire discussion in the Mechaber and the Ramah over here, which is the main discussion in the Shulchan Aruch regarding Cherem de Rabbeinu Gershom, what's missing? What's missing is any mention of heter mei rabbanim. There's no mention of that you have to, that there's a possibility that you're going to override Chayin Rabbeinu Gershom by getting 100 rabbis to agree to override this this prohibition. That's mentioned in the Korbo. The Korbo is a Rishon. It's mentioned by the Bach. The Bach is an early Achron in his commentary to the Torah. So the Bach mentions this idea, and it's mentioned by all the Meforshim. But you look in the Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention this. Shulchan Aruch says what? Shulchan Aruch, if you look in, this is the second part of Source 1. Rabbeinu Gershom Heklim Anos Alishto says that he made the prohibition, Shlo Isha Alishto, that a man is not allowed to marry another wife in addition to his original wife. So says the Ramah, Imeinu Rosa Liknos, Buhuadin, let's go to the second line, Buhuadin Mechomakam Sheishdi Choy Mitzvah. So he says that there are situations that we would permit a man to marry a second wife. The Mechabes said, B'yavama lo hechrim. The Mechabes said, if I have a mitzvah situation, like a yavama, like if, for example, a man is happily married to his wife, and then unfortunately his brother dies without any issue, without any children, so this brother's wife comes and falls in front of him in a yibum situation, the Mechabes says, that's okay. You could perform yibum in such a situation, even though it means taking on a second wife, because that's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to yibum. Rabbeinu Gershom didn't mean to say that you shouldn't marry a second wife when it would be a mitzvah. So the Ramah says, so whenever there would be a mitzvah performance in marrying a second wife, for example, like you're married to a woman for 10 years, Abraham was married, right, to Sarah, and then Sarah couldn't have any children, moved to Eretz Yisrael, 10 years passed, he doesn't have children, so he took on another wife. He took on Hagar to have a child with Hagar. So says the Ramah, Amnam Yesh Chokim, but there is the opinion that says that even in the situation of a mitzvah, that we wouldn't even allow a man to take a second wife for purposes of performing Yibam, or for purposes of being able to have children if his first wife is not able to have children and is not accepting a get. However, says the Ramah, Makom Sheinu Mishana Bas Gerushin, a situation where the first wife is not capable of receiving a get because she has dementia. Kagan Shinishtate says she lost her mind. She's mentally incapacitated. Oshu min adin legarsha, v'eino otzli kach get mimenu, or where there is a halacha that he's supposed to divorce and she refuses to accept the get. You could have a situation where she has nus with somebody, and now she's prohibited to her husband because she cheated on him. So yesh la'akal atzilo lisa acheres. If she refuses to accept the get, so then of course we would permit him to marry a second wife in that particular situation. So the Ramah mentions these particular exceptions to the rule, but he does not say anything about 100 rabbis. He does say that this original chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom only lasted until the end of the fifth millennium. The fifth millennium ended around the year 1240. That's when we had right now, what are we in? 5782. So in the year 1240. So that's when the year 5000 began. So Rabbeinu Gershom only made his takana until then. He figured that it's a very revolutionary thing to go against what the Torah would permit and say he's going to prohibit it, so he only did it for a temporary period of time. But says the Ramah, despite the fact it was only for a temporary period of time, that in our Medinos, that means the Ashkenazic countries, in the Sephardic countries, they didn't really accept the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom to begin with. That's why the Yemenites, until very recently, were marrying multiple wives. They never accepted the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom. In the Ashkenazic countries, it was accepted, and says the Ramah that they continued to observe it even after the year 1240. And not only that, not only do we now allow a man to marry a second wife in the first place, but if he did marry a second wife, so then we would require him to divorce one of them. The Meforshim all say he has to divorce the second one. It's not nice to the first wife that we're going to say, so we are going to punish the man by allowing him to now divorce the first wife. That was the whole purpose, was to protect the first wife. So it means we would force him to divorce the second wife. Some say that we can't compel the person to divorce because the chayrim is no longer fully in effect. Now it's just kind of like a minhag, it's like a custom that we've kept observing it after the year 1240, but it says the Mamave Nogin came. But that's the minhag is that no, we would compel a person to divorce a second wife if he would do such a thing. So those are the basic parameters. Those are the basic rules regarding Rabbeinu, the Chaim and Rabbeinu Gershom. The one case where the Ramah is very clear that we would allow an overriding of the Chaim is in a case of Nishtates, in a case where the woman is mentally incapacitated. So that's always been practice of the Batei Din with which I've been associated, whether it's the Beis Din of America or the Beis Din of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. In my 9 years so far with the Chicago Rabbinical Council, we've never done a case of Heter Meir Rabbanim. Everybody here is so happily married, so we don't have to do Heter Meir Rabbanim. But in New York, I was involved with maybe 5 cases of Heter Meir Rabbanim, but every single case of Heter Meir Rabbanim that I was involved with was a case where we would override the Chayim of the Rabbeinu Gershom, where the woman was in Ishtates, where the woman was mentally incapacitated. So that's, if you take a look, the Beis Shmuel, he gives you the rules. He says, Kigon Ishtates, so he quotes the Kolbo. Kolbo says, Dein la'atachem de Rabbeinu Gershom el api mea noshim. Again, it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, but it appears in the early Achronim, who comments on the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Kolbo, is the Rishon, that you require 100 different anoshim, 100 people, and the Noda B'Yuda says they have to be Talmidei Chachamim. They have to be Talmidei Chachamim. So that's why we have this term that it has to be 100 rabbis. It has to be 100 distinguished dayanim. This is a Gemara in Horios. It says that like the biggest bezdin is made up of 100 people. So some say that's the idea. You want to have the biggest possible bezdin, and they have to be made up of Megimel Kehilos, Megimel Arotzos, from three different communities in three different lands. The three different lands, the Meforshim point out, they don't have to be necessarily three totally different countries. They could be three different provinces within the same country where people have different perspectives. They have different ways of looking at things. So you want to make sure that you've covered all the bases in terms of having a proper perspective, according to every reasonable perspective that's out there, that this is a proper thing to do, to give dispensation in this particular case. What is the requirement have 100 different rabbis, 100 different Talmidei Chachamim, in a case where the Ramah said that it's certainly permissible altogether, like a case of the Ishtates? So some said, well, if it's a case of the Ishtates, maybe you don't need the 100 rabbis. You need the 100 rabbis if it's not a clear-cut case. And just based on special circumstances, 100 rabbis think that it's appropriate to give dispensation. But then he quotes the Bach, and this is whom we follow. We follow the Bach, Miu Bach Kosov, Kabbalah Migdolei Olam, that you always require 100 rabbis. You have to give the Shiloh the question about whether it's appropriate. If Nehagadolim Shabbosu Adoy, you have to submit the question to the great sages of the generation. V'yaskimu v'hetam Me'a Rabbanim. So the Korbo said Me'a Anoshim. The Bach mentions Me'a Rabbanim. This is where we have the term Heter Me'a Rabbanim. There has to be 100 rabbis. Rav Shechter likes to say, the Noda B'Yuda came along, it's quoted by the Pesach Chu, the Noda B'Yuda says that it has to be 100 Talmidei Chachamim. So some think this is a big heter. That's why in certain yeshivas, if there's a heter Me'a Rabbanim, so they just give out. They have a letter, and it has to be signed by 100 rabbis. So instead of finding 100 show rabbis, they just pass it around to all the Kolo fellows in the base medrash. Say, go, we have 100 Talmidei Chachamim, so it's much easier. So Shechter says, actually, it's a big chumra. He says, it's not so hard to find 100 rabbis, but to find 100 Talmidei Chachamim. Say that, you know, he's not so sure that it's so easy to find 100 Talmidei Chachamim. You have to make sure that the idea is that they should all be bona fide Talmidei Chachamim. The rabbis also have to be Talmidei Chachamim.
So your cases in New York, how did you, with the different lands and different, how did you actually?
So we made sure to give out to the big rabbis in California and Florida and New York, Chicago, but we also sent to other lands as well. We covered all of our bases. We would send to Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. We get the letters from the Rabbanut HaRashit in Eretz Yisrael, from the Beis Din HaGadol, when they want to do Heter Meir Rabbanim. So they send around to the Batei Din that they're familiar with. So we get the letters and we're asked to sign on to their Heter Meir Rabbanim. So we sent to Rabbanim in Australia, and we sent to Rabbanim in London, and we sent to Rabbanim in Canada, and we sent to Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael. So we sent it around to the whole world. They should all agree. So that's number one, that you need 100 rabbis.
It's just simply a Kabbalah, like Dylan said.
It's a Kabbalah, and some say that Rabbeinu Ger, that it was built in to the original Takana by Rabbeinu Gershom himself. Some say that Rabbeinu Gershom built this in himself. It's not entirely clear because there are like different nuskals, there are different versions of exactly what the wording was when it was enacted, but some say that this actually came from Rabbeinu Gershom himself. If not, that it came shortly thereafter, that the major rabbis of the generation decided that you should have 100 rabbis, you need 100 rabbis, you need a very significant consortium of dayanim who come together, who determine that it's like representing all of Klal Yisrael, because it's such a big deal to override the Takana. Some say the Chassam Sofer writes in Eben Ezra Simen Gimel, he writes that it's possible that the Chayon Rabbeinu Gershom has the force of a Deraisa. Is that how would it have the force of a Deraisa? Because we have a pasuk, right? In last week's parasha, in Parshas Bechukosai, Kocheyam Asher Yacharam Min HaAdam Lo Yipadeh Mos Yumas. So that if I have a Cherem, if I have like a major ban, so that when somebody violates the ban, it could lead to a Chiyum Misa. That's how the Ramban understands the pasuk. The Ramban, his commentary to Parshas Bechukosai, says this is a source for if you would have all the rabbis come together and they would decide that they're going to excommunicate people if they do a particular thing, they're going to ban a certain type of activity, so that has the force of a deraisa that could be the death penalty for violating that. So the Chassam Sofer thought that arguably, at least when it was a chayim, before the year of 1240, now everyone pretty much says it's only a minug, but at that point in time it was deraisa. Now we assume that it's only, that according to everybody, it would only be a drabana. No, the Biyuda says this. And therefore, what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina would be if I had a suffix situation. Do I go l'kula, do I go l'chumras? The Noda Biyuda says that I go l'kula, I would be lenient if I had sort of a suffix situation, because I say speka d'rabbanan l'kula. But this is something that's taken very seriously. That's why I have a Shlomo Kluger, for example. Rabbi Gedalia Dov Schwartz at Tzav wrote an article, but he published a few articles, not so many, a few English language articles over the course of his rabbinic career. A couple of them in the Journal of Halakha and Contemporary Society. So in volume 11 of the Journal of Halakha, he wrote an article about Heter Mei Rabbanim. So in his article about Heter Mei Rabbanim, Rav Schwartz always, whenever he wrote, he stood up for Kavod HaTorah. Privately, he would complain about the unscrupulous Batei Din that would sometimes grant the Heter Mei Rabbanim if you paid them a lot of money. And there wasn't necessarily a sound basis for Heter Mei Rabbanim. But if he was writing for the Hamonam, so he would write to preserve Kavod HaTorah. He says, yeah, there might be unscrupulous rabbis out there that are giving Heter Mei Rabbanim when it's not warranted, but the main thrust of his article was how it's a legitimate institution and that there are very clear parameters, and the parameters have to be very scrupulously followed. But he mentioned that there were certain rabbis who didn't want to get involved with Heter Mei Rabbanim altogether. One of them was Shlomo Kluger, who was a famous rabbi, Polish rabbi in the 19th century, prolific rabbi, Shlomo Kluger, very entertaining writer also. So Shlomo Kluger, he refused to participate in any Heter Mei Rabbanim. Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, in our generation, refused to participate in any Heter Mei Rabbanim because he felt that it's fraught with all kinds of perils, and all kinds of pitfalls, and you're dealing with something that started out as like a klola. If you don't respect it properly, it started out as a chayim. So the Bach has a few conditions. I guess you have to take that seriously too. I don't know that's also a big deal. Not to violate people. This is the one that people are the most familiar with. Yeah.
What are the rabbis saying when they sign off? Are they saying that we're doing away with the Takana for this case? Or are they saying she received it, we received it on her behalf? There's a variety of things they could be saying.
What they're saying is we examined very... It's a good question. What they're supposed to be saying is that we examined very carefully all the circumstances of the case, and we feel that it's legitimate on halakhic grounds to grant the husband, the right to marry a second wife in this particular case based on the circumstances of the case. So one of the things that Rav Soloveitchik was concerned about was he felt that people don't properly investigate the case. You put a piece of paper in front of their faces in the base medrash, they hear, go and sign. People sign without examining the circumstances of the case at all to see whether it's really legitimate. Maybe the letter says that the woman is demented, and she's not really demented, and there's no investigation that's described in the letter. So you have to investigate very, very carefully.
So based on what you're saying, the woman could not remarry.
The woman couldn't remarry because she's... Let's say that it's a case where she's nishtates. So that's why we have to hear the other conditions of the Bach. So the Bach has a few conditions. So one condition of the Bach is that you have to have 100 rabbis. Second condition is that the man has to set aside the amount of the wife's ksuva so that she's taken care of. She gets the amount of money that she's entitled to according to the marriage contract, and she gets the mizono. She has support, which is set aside for her. And number three, and this is very important, number three, that if she wants a get, she's entitled to a get. Meaning, when are you granting a heter mei rabbanim? You're granting a heter mei rabbanim in one of two circumstances. Either the woman is not capable of receiving a get because she's mentally incapacitated. She's not capable. She wouldn't know what a get means. So she doesn't have the dash. She doesn't have the requisite understanding to receive a get. That's the cases that we deal with. Those are the cases that we deal with, where the woman is mentally unwell. So she can't receive a get. But the other possible case, and this is what's much more fraught with danger and with potential abuse, is where the woman is refusing to accept the get, but we say that she has no right to refuse to accept the get, and therefore we're going to let the man marry a second wife anyway. So that's called like a moredis case. The woman is rebelling against the wife. She left the home, and she's refusing to accept the get. So the Beis Din of America, way back when, like around 1980 or so, you go back around 40 years, when Moshe Halevi Steinberg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the Beis Din, so they used to issue those types of heter mei rabbanim too, where the woman had her wits about her, but they said that she's not completely deranged, she's not completely incapable of communication. She's capable of communication. She's just nuts. The question is, what sort of the diagnostic standard to determine that the woman is nuts? So one at Shuva, they said the woman is very depressed. She's very depressed. So the man can't live with her because she's so incredibly depressed. And when you call her, she refuses to respond. And then they said, and we spoke to her lawyer, and her lawyer hurled such invective against the Beis Din. It's clear that they have no respect for the Beis Din. So they throw in as well that she's rebellious. She's a moreda. She's a rebellious woman. So the Rama in Siman Ayin Zion, Sif Gimel, talks about, Eben Ezra speaks about the rebellious woman and says, for a rebellious woman, we also allow for, if you wait 12 months for her to come around, if she doesn't come around after 12 months, so then you allow the man to marry a second wife. So we're makel in a case of a moredis as well. But those are much more difficult cases to determine. Is a woman really moredis? That's what the Sholem Eishim in Source 6 talks about. He says, he asked me about a question about a woman who's moredis abayla. This is towards the end of the bottom of page 2. Kama shonim, she's rebelling against her husband. She doesn't want to even go to a din Torah and so forth. So he quotes a Maharsh Dam, who says that we can allow the man to remarry even without 100 rabbis, because maybe the entire enactment of Rabbeinu Gershom expired in the year 1240. And number two, maybe the case of Moredis, we don't necessarily find that we require 100 rabbis in that particular case. But then he says that he totally disagrees with that approach, because he says there's a big difference between a Neshtates case, a woman who's mentally incapacitated, and has dementia, and a woman who's a moredis. He says, look in the fifth line. In the fifth line, he says, "Rak v'nishtates ha'dover yadu alakol." In the case of nishtates, so we understand, everybody knows that the woman has dementia. You can see, you go to her hospital bed, she has dementia. But moredis, miyodim, moredis alav, o shehukaram. But in the case of moredis, maybe she's so nasty to him because he started first, because he's so incredibly abusive to her, so that's the reason she's doesn't want to cooperate with him. How do we know if she's the moredis? Maybe he's the moed. Maybe he made her life so incredibly miserable that she just couldn't take it anymore, and therefore she doesn't want to be cooperative. So therefore he says that it's very difficult to be makel in the case of moredis, without a very careful investigation. So moredis is, so whenever the woman is around and she's mentally responsive, to give a het to mei rabbanim requires a much more scrupulous investigation, and that is one that we can't necessarily trust everybody to do so perfectly. So the truth is, sometimes it really is warranted. That's why the Beis Din of America has these tshuvos. In both of the tshuvos that I saw, when I was going through the collection of the early Tshuvas of the Beis Din of America, where the woman was functional, but they allowed her head to Meir Rabbanim. So in each of the cases, the woman was functional, but she went through a civil divorce process. They were already civilly divorced. She just was refusing to cooperate with respect to the get. So in that case, they felt it's not fair. It's not fair that you're going to trap the man. Number one, sometimes in one case, I think the man didn't fulfill Pru Avu yet. So that's like being married for 10 years and not having children. In one case, he did fulfill Pru Avu, but they said there's another mitzvah of La'erev al Tanach Yadecha. A man's entitled to have more children. Afterwards, it's a din de rabbanan. You should have as many children as possible. And also, the man has hirurim. A man has a desire to be with a woman, and here the woman is not available to him. She walked out, and it's not fair to trap the man when the woman is refusing to accept the get. But the box says very clearly, what do you have to do? You have to write a get. It says you have to write a get. She ten get biyad shliach halacha. She a get biyado ashitishtafet. That you're obligated in all of these cases to set aside a get that will be available for the woman as soon as she's willing to accept the get. So that is part of it. You can't allow a man to remarry without making a get available for the woman, even when a hetzer meir rabbanim is going to be considered to be justifiable in a particular case. This is where the major scandals of hetzer meir rabbanim come up nowadays. The major scandals of hetzer meir rabbanim is when you have bati din that make the decision that a woman is acting very, very badly, and therefore we're going to allow the husband to marry a second wife, but he doesn't have to give a get to the first wife, even though she wants to accept the get. What would be the situation? For example, the wife took the husband to secular court, so she's really supposed to agree to adjudicate their divorce disputes in a Beis Din. So she says, I don't want to adjudicate in a Beis Din. I want to adjudicate in civil court. So the Mishnah Halacha, so Menashe Klein, writes in the tshuva that I have here in Yud Aleph, source Yud Aleph on page 4. So he writes that if a woman was Halchal Arkos, she went to the Arkos, and as a result, she's going to be taking away a lot of money potentially from the husband in the court litigation that she might not be entitled to if they would be adjudicating their case in Beis Din. So then he says, in this particular case, he thinks that since the wife is doing something which is garua me'akum, she's acting worse than a non-Jew. That she's the non-Jew is not obligated to go to Beis Din. This woman's obligated to go to Beis Din, and she goes to secular court. So therefore, you have to remarry. He says that really the husband should be entitled to remarry without a hetzer meir rabbanim altogether. However, he says, okay, we're going to this nowadays. The minhag is, no matter how badly a woman has acted, the minhag, at least in the Ashkenazic community, is that we always require a hetzer meir rabbanim, no matter how strong the grounds are for the husband to remarry. So we require a hetzer meir rabbanim. But really, he says, you shouldn't have required a get altogether. But because of the fact that maybe the woman will come around and she'll be willing to take her case out of court, where if she wins the case in court, she'll be willing to return all the money. So we should require the man to write a get. However, we're not going to give the get to her. He can get remarried as long as he writes the whole thing almost seems like a travesty. He's going to write a get. What does it mean to write a get? He's going to write a get. The get's going to sit there. And we're not going to give the get to her. We're going to tell him, you can go and marry a second wife. And we're only going to give the get to the wife when she's willing to come around and to withdraw her case from secular court and to give back whatever it is that she may have won in secular court. That seems like a very harsh sentence that we're imposing upon the wife. Rav Yisachar, what's his name? Yisachar Shlomo Teichtel, the famous author of Eima Banim Smeichos. So he wrote a book called Mishneh Sachir. He wrote a Sefer Shaila, so she was beautifully written. Everything he wrote was beautiful. Beautifully written Sefer called Mishneh Sachir. So in that Sefer, he says that even in his day, we're talking about pre-war Europe, he said that for many people, even though, yes, of course, it's a very severe prohibition to go to secular court, people didn't necessarily understand. One Jew taking another Jew to secular court was such a harsh prohibition. Everyone had the requisite respect that they should have had for the Bat Din. He said, I don't think that you can treat somebody as a complete apikoros as like a heretic or a terrible rebel against God just because they're taking a case to secular court. So maybe Yeshua say or Yeshua contempt decree against him, but to say that the woman should be kept in aguna because she took the case to secular court, unless she withdraws the case from secular court and undoes everything that happened in secular court, he said he thinks that's a very harsh sentence to impose. But nonetheless, that's what the Mishnah Halacha seems to say in source of Yud Aleph. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein had a very different approach. Rav Moshe Feinstein, if you look at source Yud, so Rav Moshe Feinstein says, this is a tshuva from 43 years ago or so, says, Hinei kvar meforsim da'arti she'etet d'mei rabbanim apam redis hu dafka be'ashloshes get kosher. He says that even if the woman is a complete rebel, everybody knows that my opinion is that, of course, you need to have a hashloshes get. You need to have when there is a permission given for the man to remarry, there has to be a get which is set aside for the woman, even if she's refusing to accept the get, or even if she went to her kos and she's trying to steal money from the husband or doing anything like that. It has to be that you set aside a get. Listen to his words. These are very important words. Asher b'chol man shetirtze ha'isha l'kabel get, tucha lovu l'kabel get. It has to be an unconditionally set aside get, that at any moment that the woman wants to receive the get, she's entitled to come in to pick up the get. Now, of course, if I'm dealing with a woman who has dementia, so she's probably never going to pick up the get. She's not capable of picking up the get. But usually we require a diagnosis from a doctor that the dementia is considered to be irreversible dementia. One of the first hetem rabbanim I worked with was the case in Detroit. The man was in Detroit. They came to the Bez in America. This was in my early days. I was in my, I don't know, early 30s at the time. When I was started out as the Menahel of the Beis Din of America, and I was learning the nuts and the bolts from Rav Schwartz, so he basically just left me with the Beis Din like 28 days out of every month. So he just left me in the office to run the Beis Din. So it's nice he had so much trust in me. But I would call him up regularly, and I got this Hetem Meir Rabbanim case where the woman was in some sort of a psychiatric institution. She had dementia, so the Detroit community turned to the Beis Din of America because they figured that we're the experienced ones. We've been doing Hetem Meir Rabbanim cases for decades and decades, so they asked us to deal with it. So I asked Rabbi Schwartz about the protocol. He said, you got to go and you have to check out the woman. You can't just rely upon somebody's representation that the woman has dementia. You have to go. You got to meet with the doctors. So we went. I traveled to the nursing home facility. I met with Rabbi Yisrael Menachem Levine, I think, in Detroit. And he introduced me at the time. It's the first time that I was introduced to Avram Chaim. What was his name? Avram Chaim Levine. Who's of course the Rosh Hashiva of Tells at that. So he was in Detroit at the time with his son. So he said, "Oh, let me come take you into the living room. You meet my father." So it's the first time that I met his father. He said, "Here's Rabbi Reese from New York. He's going to help us with this Hetem Meir Rabbanim." So I came in and I went to this nursing home facility and we checked it out. The woman was clearly very, very demented. She was just lying there. She wasn't capable of even speaking or communicating or recognizing anybody. We met with the doctors so that we confirmed the diagnosis with the doctors. We got a letter about the fact that the woman was not functioning. Then we wrote it all up afterwards. So we followed all of the protocols so that everybody, all the rabbis who were asked to sign on the Hetem Meir Rabbanim could see that the woman clearly had dementia, and that we had done our research. That we had gone and I went with the two other rabbanim, Rabbi Levine and one other rabbi, I think Rabbi Eisenberger maybe, from Detroit. We all went and we checked it out, and we were able to attest to the fact that this woman was mentally incapacitated, and the husband should be able to get ahead to Meir Rabbanim. So the Yaruch HaShulchan, and if you look in source 4, Dalet, on page 2, so the Yaruch HaShulchan says, also about all of these cases, that you require Rishayon HaMalchus. What does that mean, Rishayon HaMalchus? Rishayon HaMalchus presumably means that they have to be civilly divorced as well. That you also have to require that the husband is going to civilly divorce his wife so that when he marries the second wife, he's not going to be guilty of bigamy. From a halakhic perspective, we're worried about Chayin Rabbeinu Gershom, but what about from a secular perspective? Are we going to go and authorize a bigamy if he's considered to first be married? Let's say he was civilly married to the first wife. So we noticed that in the official records of the hospital, of the nursing home, she wasn't listed as married. She was listed as a widow. Like they got the information wrong, so it probably wouldn't have been viewed as bigamy. Nobody knew what it was. It was a Russian couple. Nobody could keep track of, you know, who's whom and who's married to whom. So we didn't think that it was so necessary in this case to require the civil divorce. So we spoke to our legal experts. We had another concern that requiring a civil divorce in some of these cases could lead to an actual avil. It could actually have a counterproductive effect, because while the woman is still married to the first husband, so if he has good insurance, so she's benefiting from the insurance, and one of the obligations that he has is to take good care of her, even after he marries the second wife. So one of the conditions of the bach, he has to be miyachid a bias, he has to set aside food and sustenance and a place for her to live, and the ksuva amount has to be escrowed. So it means that she has to be properly taken care of. We were worried in our cases, if we're going to require, when the woman has dementia, a civil divorce, that maybe whatever insurance situation was in place could be get messed up. Maybe it wouldn't get messed up, but maybe it would get messed up. So why mess with the status quo? So we actually consulted with our lawyers, because we were always very careful to do everything according to the Dina de Malchusa, according to the law of the land. But our legal expert said that in this case, where it could actually lead to an atrocious, you know, an unfair result for the first wife, that she might be deprived of some of her medical benefits. So it probably was not such a good idea to insist upon a civil divorce in these cases. And they said they didn't think that the government would persecute us for us. They didn't think it was going to be a problem.
You get married,
have a religious ceremony, so she won't be won't be civilly registered. So the second marriage, it'll just be a religious ceremony. Yeah, that's right. So
Rabbi Schwartz was very against the concept of this Jewish marriage without a civil marriage.
That's right. But in this particular case, it could be that you don't have any barrier. In other words, that it would be a much bigger travesty if you end up taking away all of the medical care from this first wife.
True, but you're kind of weighing values there that go.
You are weighing. That's exactly pretty what tough. You're doing. You're weighing values, and it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. But in this particular case, I think that this was actually the right conclusion in a number of cases. Yeah.
I was under the impression that when rabbis officiate at weddings, especially where it becomes an automatic, not only a kedushin, but also a civil marriage is by that, that the rabbi is acting as an officer of the court.
Sometimes the rabbi, especially if it's going to be registered as a civil marriage. But there's a question: can you perform a marriage if it's not going to be registered as a civil marriage? In many states, it's considered to be a misdemeanor, but it's a misdemeanor that's a little bit confusing. There's a recent case, like for example, in New York, there's some case that says, yeah, that's if they really intend to be civilly married. But if they only intend to be religiously married and not civilly married, so then it's really okay. They're not considered, it's not considered like you're performing a marriage without the registering.
The obligation is on the rabbi.
The obligation is on the rabbi.
Not on the couple.
That's right. The obligation is completely on the rabbi. To the extent that it's a misdemeanor in many states, the misdemeanor is on the clergyman who performs the wedding. So that clergyman has to just decide. He's willing to take his chances. So maybe this case doesn't count as a misdemeanor. It's not really prosecuted so much or at all. I suppose it's a question constitutionally whether it's really an enforceable law. That's a separate question. Some people, Bedavka, will do it in Florida, because it seems that in Florida it's not a misdemeanor. In Florida it says don't do it, but then when they're listing the misdemeanors, they don't list this as a misdemeanor. So it's something in between a mitzvah and aveira, but it's not explicitly a misdemeanor.
Social Security,
right? Exactly, but it's done all the time. If you look at, again, we have lawyers in the room. You'll look at the statutes. You'll see it doesn't seem to be a misdemeanor in Florida, even though it's not a lechatchila, whatever that however that term will be translated into legal jargon. It's not a lechatchila, but it doesn't seem to be a misdemeanor either. Okay, so continuing with the Igros Moshe. So the Igros Moshe says, this is only, you can only do it, b'hashloshes get kosher, shebechos man shetir, so yishu l'kabu get tucha, l'abu l'kabu l'get, v'lios muteres li'ama. It has to be that regardless of how badly she's acted, if you're going to allow a hetemeh rabbanim, you have to make a get unconditionally available for her. So if she has dementia, okay, so she comes out of dementia, she could pick up the get. Some say if you authorize the get to be written when she had dementia and she wasn't capable of receiving it at that time, so maybe then that wouldn't be a valid get. You have to write a new get. Yeah, that's the magia to the Mishnah Melech makes that suggestion. It's a mimosa lo matzi aviru lo matzi mashvi shliach. The person at the time they were appointing the shliach, they wouldn't be able to give a get to their wife because the wife has dementia. So maybe afterwards, if she really would recover from the dementia, you have to write a new get. So he has to take a shvur. He has to take an oath that he'll write a new get. That's the policy that we follow. It's never happened that the woman has come out of the dementia. But in the case, let's say she didn't have dementia, and you're going to grant a heter meir rabbanim based on the fact that she's refusing to accept the get, and she rebelled against the Besdin, and she's or she has some sort of a mental illness where she is functional, but she's just refusing to accept the get. So even then, or let's say she went to court against Besdin, and she's refusing to accept the get. She did other bad things. Nonetheless, if you're going to allow the man to remarry, you have to make a get unconditionally available for her. She wants it right now. She'll accept it right now. She wants it in 2 years. She'll pick it up in 2 years. Afilim yesh lebalet fias mamon. Even if the husband has all kinds of monetary claims against her, maybe she went to secular court. Kichas v'shalom, shagon rabbeinu gershom, mor hagola, yisakin dava takala, lagin basi sole, so shehi. You can't allow to come out of rabbeinu gershom that a woman's going to end up being an aguna. Can't be. She's an outright thief, that she actually snatched away money from her husband. Rabbeinu Gershom did not enact. None of the Gaonim would have enacted such a thing. And nobody should enact such a thing. That the husband would be able to make it a good. He'll get remarried, and he's going to prevent her from accepting a get. He says that counts for nothing. Then he goes on a couple of lines later. He says, and if there would be such a heter, I don't give 1,000 rabbis in America sign a heter to allow a man to remarry without making a get unconditionally available for his wife. It would be batel mevutel. It would be absolutely no good. It would be ein a heter shlabesin shitivu klum. It would be absolutely garnished in such a case. So that's the ruling of Moshe Feinstein. This ruling of Moshe Feinstein is one that we felt was an appropriate ruling that should be followed over here. I had a case in California a number of years ago. There was a husband whose wife actually had been in Besdin, but somehow the Besdin proceedings didn't work out. And then she ended up taking the husband to secular court. And one of the Bat Din in the area, perfectly reputable Beis Din, said, okay, she's doing the wrong thing by taking the husband to secular, but she didn't have a get yet. Taking the husband to secular court, we're going to issue a seiriv against her. We're going to issue a seiriv, a contempt order against her, that she's doing the wrong thing by taking the husband to secular court. So one of the Sephardic Rabbanim in the community, the Sephardim don't even have Heter Meir Rabbanim. So they have Tanai, there's like a built-in condition that it's understood, either it's stated in the Ksuva or it's implicitly understood, the Mefarshim say that a husband can't marry a second wife, but because of the fact that it was never based on a cherim, so it's a forgivable offense. So let's say that the wife is mochela, she says, it's okay, you can marry a second wife, I don't mind. If it's based on a cherim, so then we're worried, like the Ron Rice in his tshuvos, that maybe the wife's going to be pressured into it. That's part of the takana, that we don't allow the wife to waive her right against the husband marrying a second wife. Even if she approves, we're not going to allow it. But in the Sephardic community, if she approves, it is okay. But Rabbi Yosef has tshuvos like this. There's a ruling from the Bezin Netanya. A few years ago, a man was married 26 years. 26 years to a woman, they couldn't have any children. Now he wants to marry another woman with whom he was able to have children. I'm gathering she must have been much younger than him. But said now he wants to marry another woman. And the first wife says, sure, sure. We tried everything. It's not his fault. We did all these operations. And he was so forbearing and so patient with me. And he gave me 26 years. 100%. I don't want to get divorced. And he didn't want to divorce her either. Wants to take on a second wife. Fine, he can take on a second wife. And they interviewed the husband and the best, and how are you going to have two different wives in the same house? No problem. I have one house over here, another house in the other town. I'll spend 1 week in this house. I'll spend 1 week in the other house. So each wife will have her own, you know, separate private place. And the best and said, that's great. That's fine. We're Spartan. Okay. In this particular case, even though we don't normally allow it, but since the wife is okay with it and he doesn't otherwise have children, sure, we will all be happy together. He'll have two different wives, right? That's Groucho Marx line, you know, he wanted to marry two different women. So one of them says, it's bigamy. He says, sure, it's bigamy. It's bigamy. It's bigger you. It's big of all of us. So I said, this is so that they all, you know, agree that they'll go through with it. So that's sure, if you have a Sephardic orientation, so then I guess that can work out. But in the Ashkenazic world, so we don't allow mechila. We don't allow that you're going that you could be moichel having a second wife. So it's something which has to which requires a lot more circumspection. So what about so this thing about Rav Moshe? Where we say that we're not going to allow somebody to marry a second wife. So what happened in this case? So this Los Angeles case, one of the Sephardic rabbis saw that the Ashkenazic Beis Din issued a seiruv against his wife, said she's acting against the Torah. She's an Overes El Das. So therefore, according to our tradition, we don't need 100 rabbis. We'll just allow the husband to get married to a second wife. But this woman wanted to get. She wanted to get very badly. She was clamoring for get from day one. She wanted to get. Oh, but if she wants to get, they looked at the tshuva in the Mishnah Halachos. It's also a tshuva. If you look in Source Tezvav, the Moshe Sternbach on the Tshuvas Van Hagos seems to say the same thing. Seems to say the same thing. If the woman went to a secular court, also she was halachas darkos. He says that we permit the man to marry another woman. Vakiashli shaget bebezdin kemekubo. We just set aside a get in the bezdin, and the get will be made available for her when she comes out of the secular court. That's basically what he's saying. The get will be made available for her when she comes out of the second when she comes out of the secular court. Take a look. He says the last paragraph on the bottom of page 6. Lamaisa shele nogas l'America. This applies to America. The Aruch HaShulchan famously, when he was writing about Hetzemei Rabbanim and Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom, so he says Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom applies to America because everyone who came to America, they came from lands where the Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom had been applicable, so therefore everyone who went to America is subject to the Chayim de Rabbeinu Gershom. So says the Rav Moshe Sternbach, V'al Rabbanim Shama L'Acharia, the rabbis in America have to decide. V'al Daiti Ke Rabbanim Shama, but I agree with the rabbis there. Hamatzimin Lisa Isha Acheres, B'li Pikpuk V'yashli Shaget. I agree that the man should be allowed to marry another woman without any problems. Just let him set aside again. Shetavatil harakos neso also lisa isha shir garsha kedin. And when she agrees to take the case out of court, so then we'll prohibit him if he hasn't, you know, gotten married yet. So then we'll prohibit him from getting married. But otherwise, he seems to indicate. Yashli shaget. Look at the previous paragraph, the second to last line. Yashli shaget ashetavatil harakos. That the get doesn't automatically get given to the wife. It gets given to the wife when the secular court case will be terminated by her. So that seemed to be the approach that was being followed by this particular rabbi. Even Rav Moshe Sternbach seems to be speaking a little bit out of both sides of his pen. Because in the next paragraph, he says, yeah, but I think that it's terrible that husbands don't give a get to their wives when the wives really want out of the marriage and they can't stand the husbands. They say, Ma'isolai, and the husbands are repugnant and and the husbands nonetheless give the wives a hard time and they finagle with them and they refuse to give them a get. And it's really the wrong thing. And there's another tshuvin. This was in Chelik, in Krach Dalet, Simen Shin Aleph. There's another tshuva in the same Chelik, in Simen Reish Tzadi Vav, not so far removed from where this tshuva is, in which he says in a particular case where a woman had received a get that was given under false pretenses, because she said she's going to drop a criminal case against her husband, but then she didn't drop the criminal case against her husband, and now he wants to get remarried, and he claims that the first get is no good, and she claims the first get is good. So Moshe Sternbach says that because I think the first get might have been given under false pretenses, it was a get muta, I think the get might really not be good, and I'm afraid for this woman. If we're going to allow the man to remarry, maybe she'll be stuck, people won't recognize the get. Therefore, let him set aside a get that she can pick up at any point in time, unconditionally, without any problem, and only then are we going to allow him to remarry. So it's a little unclear about how consistently Rav Moshe Sternbach maintained this particular position, but it is what he says in this tshuva. I asked Rav Herschel Schechter Shlita about this tshuva. I said, do we have to be worried? Rav Moshe Sternbach is a big Talmid Chacham. He's the head of the Eidah Charedis in Eretz Yisrael. Do we have to be worried? This tshuva seems to go against Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein says the get has to be made available unconditionally. So he said, nah, you don't have to worry about this tshuva. He says, of course we don't hold like this tshuva. Of course we don't like Rav Moshe. We don't like this tshuva. He thought it was outlandish. He thought for sure we wouldn't hold this way. So this rabbi anyway, this rabbi in Los Angeles saw the Seiruf. And perform the wedding, or it's not clear. It's not clear whether he performed the wedding for this particular man. The man was actually a son of a big rabbi. Okay, whatever. That's not a necessary detail for this discussion. And he thought that it was perfectly, and he did not make sure that there'd be a get, that would be available unconditionally for the wife. I think that they did authorize the get to be written, but to be set aside and not given to the wife until she took the case out of court. So I did two things. One, I spoke to the Beis Din that issued the seiruv against the wife, and I said, I don't think it's a very good policy to issue a seiruv against the wife when the husband hasn't yet given a get. I said that we have a notion of nikah ish me'avam when it comes to hilchosota, for example, that the me'amarim, the bitter waters, only test the wife when the husband is free from iniquity, when the husband is free from sin. So you issue a seiruv that you want to say that the wife is acting in a fashion which is recalcitrant, so the husband has to show nikah ish me'avam that he has clean hands. Let him give his wife a get. If he wants a seiruv to say that the wife is in contempt of court, let him do everything in an exemplary fashion. Let him give his wife a get, and then we could talk about giving a seiruv against the wife for refusing to come out of secular court. That was always my policy in the Beis Din of America. It was always my policy. I would not issue a seiruv against the wife in a get case when she wanted a get and the husband was refusing to give her a get, even if she was doing the wrong thing, even if she was going to secular court and not to Beis Din. I say, you want a seiruv? Give your wife a get, and then we could talk about doing a seiruv. And I had a number of cases like that. I discussed that policy with Rav Tzvi Gartner Shlita, who wrote the book on kfiya beget, on what's considered to be a coerced get, what are proper measures, improper measures, and so forth. He agreed with that policy. I instituted that policy earlier. I said, because if he is going to issue a seiruv against the wife, it's going to look to some of the rabbanim like you can throw the book at her, like it's okay that the husband's not giving his wife a get. You're going to let the husband remarry. There's a notorious case in Las Vegas where the husband remarried without giving his first wife a get, got a hetter from somebody, and there's nothing, nobody seems to have any sway over this husband. It's a terrible, scandalous case. It's just a black spot on the American rabbinate that such a thing was allowed to happen. Somebody performed the wedding for this particular man. So then I wrote a letter. I called up this rabbi and he justified his actions. I said, but it goes against Moshe Feinstein. Lo ye'asachem imkomenu. That's not the way we do things in America. So I wrote a letter. I copied all the rabbis that this person's rabbinic organization, the Beis Din in the city, everybody I copied on this that we don't allow this. This goes against Moshe Feinstein and you have to correct this terrible travesty immediately. And that's all. So I guess I sent the letter out. And then within a couple of months, the woman received her get. Within a couple of months, the woman received her get. So after we took this proactive stance against this measure, I then met this rabbi at a chasana. I met this rabbi at a chasana a couple of years later. I don't know what's going to happen when we have our first interaction. So he walked over to me. He ran over to me at the chasana. And he said, I have to thank you. I have to thank you because I didn't understand the halacha. I didn't know that the halacha was that you have to see to it that the wife receives a get if you're going to allow the man to remarry, and you really illuminated my eyes and enabled me to see the light. And because of your letter and because of your pressure, I was able to bring about the correct result, and I want to give you a big yes shikov. So halavai should always be that. It was great. Okay, so they had such a case. In Eretz Yisrael, just to look at the last source, in source Yud Zayin. Source Yud Zayin. There's a discussion here of Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a sort of weird esoteric case we're not going to go into right now. Okay? But it's mostly really intended for Lumdus, I think, rather than Halacha Lemaise. So in source 17, at the Beis Din in the Beis Din HaYizori in Yerushalayim, just 3 years ago, under Rav Uriel Levi, so they had a case where they had a Beis Din proceeding in Eretz Yisrael, and the husband was refusing to cooperate, and then the husband ran off to London, and he got some dayan in London to permit him to marry a second wife, based on the fact that his first wife was a Moredis because she wasn't cooperating with them. So the Beis Din said, this is absolutely ridiculous. What do you mean? She's not cooperating with you because of the fact she doesn't have to cooperate with you. We have a case here in the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael, and the non-cooperative party is the husband. And this Rav in London permitted the husband to remarry a second wife without making a get unconditionally available for the first wife. So what we discovered is that little beknownst to us, But for Yosef Shalom HaYoshev, Zechat Tzadik Levocha, who's the Gadol Hador, after Rav Moshe Feinstein, he said the same thing as Rav Moshe Feinstein, that he made a takana, that he said that this is printed in the Sefer Yisa Yosef, by his Shamish, Rav Yosef Efrati, which says, because of the fact that there's so much incredible abuse when it comes to the world of Hetamei Rabbanim, so we're going to make the following takanos, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all based on what Rav Moshe Feinstein said. Number one, you can only have a Bezin Chashu that's going to issue a Hetamei Rabbanim. Number two, you have to make sure that the Rabbanim who are joined together with the Hetamei Rabbanim are Rabbanim who are big Chashuva, Russia Yeshivos who know what they're doing. Number three, they have to give their contact information so that it's not going to be a fraudulent document. Number four, that a Rav is only allowed to sign in such a document after he's investigated very carefully all the circumstances. Number five, that you need to have at least another distinguished bezdin that's going to review all of the reasoning. And number six, most importantly, alabal ashlish get bidei bezdin neman kadesha isha tucha lekabelas gita bechol e shetirtze. Whenever you go to issue a hetamei rabbanim, you have to make the get unconditionally available for the wife anytime she wants to pick it up. Below shum kilkoshi, without any difficulties, so minius, and without any conditions, whatever the situation might be. Heter anita lebal lo ashloshes get kaamar. If a heter is given without setting aside such a get, yichashiv the chaser erech lachalutin is going to be considered to be null and void. So one of the things that we're doing here in America right now is to try to get such a document which is signed by all of the rabbis who are misadre yegitin, in which we also have an official declaration that we're not going to tolerate this type of activity for hetamei rabbanim to be given without making a get available for the woman to be unconditionally provided to her whenever she wants to pick it up. So we wrote something. This is, goes back to 2017. We, the undersigned, representing rabbinical courts across the spectrum of North America Jewish community, stated queer unequivocally, a hetamei rabbanim should never be signed or issued by a bezdin when the wife is prepared to accept the get. It is prohibited for the bezdin to issue such a het if the man is not prepared to get for his previous wife to be given to her unconditionally at any time that she wishes to accept it. So it's signed by Rav Schefter, it's signed by Rabbi Willig, myself obviously, signed by Rabbi Union in California. It's been signed since that, it was signed by Rabbi Gedaliah Dov Schwartz, Zechat Tzadik Levacha, signed by Rabbi Senderovic, others. So one of these days, I don't know how many more signatures we're waiting for. One of these days, we plan to disseminate, you know, this document. But it's very, very important to prevent any kind of hetamei rabbanim abuse. It should only be issued in a way that it prevents a woman from being an aguna, even if it's a situation where, you know, it's appropriate to enable a man as well to be able to move on with his life. Okay, so we'll stop for here. Mr. Shem, meet again 2 weeks from today.
Two questions. The expression lahashlish get. I don't know. I never heard the expression.
That means that you're escrowing the get with a shliach laholacha, meaning that the get.